Robinhood Radio presents Your Health with osteopathic physician Dr. Kim Tripp, a show presented monthly on Robinhood Radio, discussing the challenges faced and the solutions that are available for keeping vital health and well-being throughout our lives. And now, here's Dr. Tripp.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Your Health with Dr. Kim Tripp, osteopathic physician. This is the health show created to bring you vital information and discussion of all kinds of health issues on your mind and in your life, from the unique perspective of traditional osteopathic medicine. So first, let's clarify what osteopathic medicine means for our new listeners. Osteopathic medicine is practiced by fully licensed physicians in the United States with a DO degree, a Doctor of Osteopathic Medicine degree. Our practice is based on the essential relationship in all living things between structure and function. In other words, the natural interdependence between anatomy and physiology, or between the physics of the body and its chemistry. As osteopathic physicians, we use our comprehensive and precisely detailed knowledge of anatomy and physiology to promote health and healing in our patients. We work gently with our hands to help your body restore optimal function based on optimal structure. Our medical specialty is therefore called osteopathic manual medicine. We receive uniquely in-depth training in anatomy and physiology and their relationship within your body in the context of a full physician's medical training. Only U.S.-trained osteopaths are fully licensed physicians and have all of the current medical pharmacopoeia, nutritional science, and full medical training at our disposal. This means that your individual treatment may include a wide range of approaches, but will always be founded on our gentle hands-on work. We practice from the unique perspective of first looking for the health in our patients, rather than merely finding illness and disease. Our practice has been especially effective for, but is not limited to, musculoskeletal and other structural issues, as well as problems like chronic headache, gastrointestinal issues, post-concussion syndrome, sleep disturbance, allergies, and many, many other problems. We work together with you, the patient, to help you build health and vitality in your body, mind, and spirit as the solution for health problems, rather than only treating the disease symptoms. So in the radio show, we tackle health issues from this point of view. What can we do to help you build your health and vitality in order to prevent and heal injuries and disease? And we do that by giving you some basic information about the problem to help you understand what's happening, as well as offer solutions and guidance for helping yourself to heal and stay healthy based on our clinical experience with patients in our practice. Before we get started on today's topic, let me remind you that you can listen to all of the prior Your Health shows online at your convenience, such as the shows on nutrition, the gastrointestinal system, the liver, the kidney, etc., by going to the Goldman Tripp website, www.goldmantripp.net. Click on the radio show icon, then scroll down and click on the individual show by topic. There are now more than 40 shows available. You can also get the most recent show podcasts on the Robinhood Radio website itself in the on-demand section. It makes it all very convenient. Today we're going to continue our consideration of the human heart, with some associated consideration of the vascular system, of course, as they are so completely and totally related. Let's take a few minutes to review some of the essential background from the first show on the heart. The adult human heart is about the size of a fist and shaped something like an upside-down pear, not like the hearts on the Valentine's Day cards. It weighs from about 9 to 11 ounces. The heart is on average smaller in women and larger in men, and is found sitting right on top of the thoracic diaphragm behind and to the left of the sternum. It sits pointed downward and leftward and is rolled somewhat on its side. The heart is covered in a fascial membrane called the pericardium, peri meaning around, and cardium referring to the heart. The heart is a multi-chambered muscle with special valves and complex innervation that allow for the sequential and selective filling and emptying of its four chambers. The heart is the pump that sends oxygen-rich blood throughout the body and deoxygenated blood to the lungs for a refill of oxygen and an unloading of carbon dioxide. Recall that all the cells in the body are dependent on oxygen delivered by the blood to live and must have their accumulated carbon dioxide removed through the veins to avoid being poisoned by that CO2. The heart receives that deoxygenated blood from the veins and pumps that deoxygenated blood to the lungs, where the blood can then be reoxygenated. It receives the newly reoxygenated blood from the lungs and pumps that oxygen-rich blood to itself and the rest of the body. This miraculous transfer happens with each complete beat cycle of the heart. As we breathe in, the lungs deliver oxygen to the capillaries that will ultimately return blood to the heart. And as we exhale, the lungs remove CO2 that has been received from the capillaries that brought the deoxygenated blood from the large pulmonary arteries leaving the heart. The heart is divided into four chambers: the two smaller atria that make up the upper portions of the heart, and the two larger ventricles that make up the lower portions of the heart. The atria receive blood from their respective delivering vessels, and the two ventricles pump blood out of the heart and into their respective receiving vessels. They work in two partnerships. The left atrium and ventricle make one partnership that deals with oxygenated blood, and the right atrium and ventricle make up the other partnership that deals with the deoxygenated blood. So there's a constant flow of deoxygenated blood to the lungs and return of oxygenated blood to the heart and then out into the body. The sequence of filling and sequential closing of the valves creates the familiar lub-dub, lub-dub of the heartbeat. So keeping that review in mind, let's delve into the relationship between the heart and the blood vessels that we call the circulatory system. And this will bring us to a consideration of blood pressure and how blood pressure and heart rate are integrally related. Recall that our blood circulatory system consists of arteries, which carry oxygenated blood away from the heart throughout the body, and veins, which carry deoxygenated blood back from the body to the heart so it can be returned to the lungs for reoxygenation. The arteries and veins divide into smaller and smaller vessels until they are ultimately found as capillaries, which are integrated units of tiny arterioles and venules that supply all the tissues throughout the body. The delivery of blood through the arteries is actively driven by the pumping of the heart and is made possible by the resistance of the artery walls. Kind of like how water is pushed through a hose when you turn on the tap. The more you open up the tap to increase the volume of water coming out of the tap into the hose, the faster the water will be pushed through the hose and the greater the pressure of delivery of the water out through the open end. On the other hand, the delivery of blood back from the body to the heart through the veins relies on several mechanisms. The beating of the heart itself promotes venous return through changes in both sides of the heart during each beat cycle. There are significant pressure changes created as the valves open and close and the blood flows from atria to ventricles, and as the ventricles contract to push the blood out of the heart. These pressure changes create positive pressures that push blood from behind all along the vascular tree throughout the body, and negative pressures that exert a suction effect on the great veins and help draw blood into the atria. In addition to the beating of the heart itself, there are also so-called muscular pumps and respiratory pumps that help move the venous blood back to the heart. And the anatomy of veins is different than that of arteries. The veins have tiny valves inside to help prevent backflow as the venous blood moves upwards towards the heart. The muscular pumps work as the movements of the body cause associated contracture of peripheral muscles, like those in our lower legs, to support the return of the blood through the veins. The respiratory pumps work because of pressure changes that occur in the abdomen and thorax during inhalation and exhalation of breathing. As we breathe in, the pressure increase in the abdomen and decrease in the thorax results in more venous blood being sucked up toward the heart. As we age, the resilience and resistance of the walls of the veins can become lessened, making it harder for our bodies to return the blood to the heart, and leading to issues like chronic ankle swelling and venous insufficiency. The management of fluid in the body also integrally depends on our third circulatory system, the lymphatics, to which complex and fascinating topic we'll devote another show entirely, so stay tuned for that particular subject. Meanwhile, keeping fit and moving will help prevent any of these kinds of problems. Heart rate and blood pressure are the body's primary way of regulating how much blood moves through the arteries, and therefore how much oxygen is delivered to the tissues. The greater the volume of blood flow to the tissues, the more oxygen will be delivered. Faster heartbeats, pumping blood against more resistant arterial walls, will lead to more blood moving out into the body. This is why heart rate and blood pressure increase during exercise. Heart rate is measured as our pulse, literally the counting of each pulse of blood moving through an easily palpated artery, like the one on your wrist, with each beat of the heart. Blood pressure is the pressure found within the arteries during the full heartbeat cycle. Blood pressure is measured as two numbers, called the systolic pressure, which is the larger top number on a lab report, and which is measured during the active pumping of blood out from the ventricles, and the diastolic pressure, which is the smaller bottom number, which is measured during the subsequent filling stage between surges of blood out of the ventricles. The pressure within the arteries is affected by many variables and is one of the most important aspects of our regulatory physiology that interacts with and is influenced by the brain, kidneys, heart, lungs, nervous system, endocrine system, immune system, and gastrointestinal system. In short, the entire body. One more thing to keep in mind. The walls of the arteries can be stimulated to contract and tighten, which reduces the size of the opening through the vessel and adds resistance to the blood flow and therefore increases blood pressure. Of course, this also means they can alternatively relax, offering a larger tube and less resistance. The complex regulation of the relative stiffness of the arteries is a critical part of how blood pressure is managed by the body. Over time, if the arteries maintain chronically increased stiffness, this can lead to cardiovascular disease and is one of the reasons why maintenance of normal blood pressure is so important. There are four major determinants of blood pressure. They are blood volume. The more volume of blood present means that the vessels and heart have to work harder to pump that blood through the circulatory system, which increases the pressure within the vessels. The second is something called overall compliance. The elastic characteristics of the blood vessels contribute to the overall pressure in the vessels. When the vessels have relaxed and expanded, the blood pressure is lowered. And if the vessels tighten and contract to make a smaller opening, blood pressure will increase. Compliance refers to the ability of that vessel wall to relax. The third is cardiac output, which means the output of blood from the heart. Cardiac output is influenced by two other factors, heart rate and stroke volume, i.e., the volume of blood released with each beat. When the heart rate is fast, or the stroke volume is high, cardiac output increases. Therefore, when cardiac output increases, then the arterial pressure will also increase. And lastly, there is something called peripheral resistance. That is the resistance of the arteries throughout the body to the incoming flow of blood as the heart pumps the blood out of the ventricles. Peripheral resistance is also related to overall compliance. When peripheral resistance increases, the overall compliance decreases, meaning the arterial walls are less able to be flexible, and thus the arterial blood pressure increases. All four of these variables are influenced in different ways by the various regulatory systems of the body. As arterial blood is pumped from the heart to the various blood vessels, enough pressure is generated in order to send blood to all parts of the body. As the blood travels further from the heart, the arteries branch off and gradually decrease in size, much like the branches of a tree. One branch may travel to the stomach, while another may transport blood to the muscles, and yet another to the brain. Blood pressure keeps the blood flowing through all these branches so that the cells of the body can receive the oxygen and nutrients needed to sustain life. When the heart contracts, pressure built up in the blood vessels increases as the blood passes through, while the opposite is true when the heart relaxes in between heartbeats. For the blood to be able to reach all of the vital organs and tissues, healthy, elastic blood vessels that will stretch and recoil as the pressure goes up and down, respectively, are needed. When we have chronically high blood pressure, called hypertension, the vessels become hard and inelastic, which means they are more likely to get blocked or even rupture, which could lead to organ damage and even organ failure. So it's important to regulate hypertension to reduce the risks of organ damage, heart attacks, and strokes. Sometimes we can suffer from overly low blood pressure. This is called hypotension. When blood pressure is too low, blood is not pumped effectively through the systemic vasculature of the body. This leaves the body with a lack of blood supply getting to the brain, organs, and tissues. With organs not receiving optimal blood supply, its cells do not receive the proper amounts of oxygen and cannot carry out fundamental metabolic processes efficiently, which reduces the amount of energy the cells produce to power the body. This can lead to a host of problems such as fainting, dizziness, and even seizures. So we can see how crucial the appropriate minute-to-minute regulation of blood pressure is in order to maintain appropriate blood supply to all the tissues of the body, including the brain and the heart itself. This is why blood pressure is influenced by so many different systems in the body. The heart itself depends on its own blood supply to keep that muscle pumping effectively via the coronary arteries. If these become blocked, we can have a so-called ischemic heart attack. Ischemic means suffering from lack of blood, leading to a myocardial infarction, meaning there's death of part of the heart's muscle tissue due to a lack of blood supply, so it can't continue to adequately pump blood. But this is not the only way we can have a problem with this complex and exquisitely fine-tuned cardiovascular system. Let's look at a few examples of how heart rate and blood pressure are co-regulated before continuing with some other pathologies. The cardiovascular system works with a complex series of reflex regulations so that an appropriate supply of oxygenated blood can be reliably provided to different body tissues under a wide range of daily circumstances while we're awake or asleep. The monitoring for this includes mechanical information about pressure in the arterial system from barosensors, meaning pressure sensors, and secondarily, chemical information about the level of oxygen and carbon dioxide in the blood from the chemosensors. The autonomic nervous system responds to this information through balancing the relative activity of parasympathetic, rest and digest, and sympathetic, fight or flight, activities relevant to required cardiovascular control as determined by the information supplied by these sensors. A common example that requires such a reflex autonomic response to a fall in blood pressure is just the act of standing up. Rising quickly from sitting or lying down produces a shift of some 300 to 800 milliliters of blood from the chest and abdomen to the legs, resulting in a sharp decrease in the output of the heart. The adjustment in this normally occurring drop in blood pressure, called orthostatic hypotension, must be rapid and effective, as evidenced by the dizziness sometimes experienced in this situation when it doesn't keep up. Many health and environmental factors can influence this finely tuned autonomic balance. Fever, illness, pain, dehydration, physical or emotional trauma, blood sugar levels, exercise, electrolyte imbalance, baseline muscle tone, stress, fear, anxiety, numerous varied hormone levels. In short, anything that influences the autonomic nervous system of the body or the physical condition of the heart muscle and its circulation and innervation itself. There are hundreds of pathological conditions that can cause heart disease. A full discussion of all the possible cardiovascular pathologies is well beyond the scope of this program. But here are a few key examples. Arrhythmias are disruptions of the normal, even rhythm of the beating of the heart. These can be caused by many problems, including mechanical disruption of the electrical conduction tissue of the heart, or any of the nervous tissue that controls that heartbeat, as well as by thyroid or other endocrine disorders. Atrial fibrillation is one of the most common and most dangerous arrhythmias, as it can lead to the formation of clots within the heart that can be circulated and cause stroke. Some other arrhythmias are less dangerous, but should always be evaluated by a physician. Heart valve disease is also a common problem. Any of the valves of the heart can gradually lose their ability to open and close completely, leading to incomplete emptying of the chambers, disrupting the sequence of filling, and impacting the volume of blood flow into and out of the heart. This can also lead to clotting within the heart, as well as inadequate blood flow to the heart itself and the rest of the body. Heart failure can be caused by many problems. Heart failure means the literal failure of the heart to deliver blood to the body in itself. Congestive heart failure is a common problem that occurs when there is fluid overload, hence the word congestive. Certain conditions, such as narrowed arteries in your heart, coronary artery disease, or high blood pressure, gradually leave your heart too weak or stiff to fill and pump efficiently. Blood can then back up, causing fluid to leak out of vessels and collect in your lungs and extremities, leading to the classic heart failure symptoms of shortness of breath and leg swelling. This is a medical emergency. Anything that leads to damage and death of the myocardium, meaning that muscle tissue of the heart, can lead to many serious problems, including heart attack, where the heart simply can't beat. The myocardium can be damaged by numerous drugs, regular alcohol use, radiation, inadequate exercise, environmental toxins, and anything that can damage muscle tissue in general, including infections. The key to avoiding these issues is to maintain health and vitality throughout your body. A heart-healthy diet and regular exercise that increases your heart rate are crucial to maintaining cardiac health. Minimizing stress and optimizing sleep and mental health are also important so that you're not living in a constant state of sympathetic fight-or-flight overdrive, which drives up blood pressure. Find time to spend outdoors in an environment where you can take a brisk walk and experience beauty and peace for your whole physical heart's health and well-being, which means your own total health and well-being. Which brings me back to osteopathy and to the close of today's show with a reminder that a good osteopathic physician who is a specialist in osteopathic manual medicine can be especially helpful for cardiovascular issues of all kinds, working gently with our hands, with the involved fascia, muscles, organs, nerves, arteries, veins, lymphatics, and all the associated tissues to release restrictions in the physical tissues throughout the body from head to feet, as well as to help balance the autonomic nervous system function based on a precise knowledge of functional anatomical detail. Recall that all of the body is involved with and dependent on the cardiovascular system as a complex physical entity with connections between all the parts that need to be open, flexible, and moving freely with excellent neural conduction from the cranial nerves, optimal arterial and venous blood flow and lymphatic drainage to remain healthy, vital, and functioning normally. Wow, that was a big topic. Fascinating and complicated. And I used up all my time. So thank you so much for your attention to Your Health with Dr. Kim Tripp. Remember, you can email your comments and suggestions for topics to yourhealth@robinhoodradio.com. If you have a health issue yourself and you'd like to find out about how we might be able to help you in our practice of traditional osteopathy, we're at our offices in Sharon, Connecticut, Dr. Kim Tripp and Dr. Andrew Goldman, Goldman Tripp Osteopathic Healthcare, 860-364-5990, Monday to Friday, 8:45 a.m. to 5 p.m. with evening hours Wednesdays and Fridays, or on the web at www.goldmantripp.net. Well, I'll be looking forward to being with you next time. In the meanwhile, you take care of yourself, enjoy your health, and thank you for listening.